This is the best of RSN Central, so thanks for listening. And don't forget to join us from Monday to Friday on RSN 927 from 10:30 to 1. And if you miss anything from RSN Central, head to our website at rsn.net.au or subscribe to RSN Central on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1-800-858-858.
It's Sammy Showdown, Tornado Valley, Sky Petite, Wobbly Wider, Massive Metro Gallop, Tornado Valley hit the lead, Wobbly after Tornado Valley, it's Tornado Valley with Wobbly coming, Tornado Valley's giving, he keeps fighting and Tornado Valley wins again. Tornado Valley a nose to Wobbly. Out wide, Temporale.
That's another Group 1 for Tornado Valley. He won the Great Southern Star at his previous start. I think he's won around five Group 1s. He's one of the most underrated horses going around. Like, he reminds me of a Corey Enright for the Geelong Football Club off a halfback flanker. Not until really after his career you really appreciate how good he was. And Tornado Valley just gets the job done. He doesn't win by big margins, but he wins. And he was too strong, too tough to sit in the breeze and win that Group 1 night pistol there last night. Andy Gath is his trainer and he joins us now. Good morning to you, Andy.
Yeah, good morning, Gareth.
He's an amazing trotter, really, and it's hard to believe that he paid $3.40 last night.
Yeah, no, definitely. Again, he's probably known as the front runner, the fact that he's led 18 times and won 18 times in front, but he still has won another 9 races from back in the field as well. So, he's just a quality horse and, you know, he just keeps rising to the occasion.
Did you expect that performance last night?
Always expect a great performance from him. You know, never expect to go there winning with him. I know how hard it is to win any race, let alone Group 1 races. And the Group 1s now, you sold him a little bit short. But
That's
all right. But again, he just, just kind of like the way that he just digs in and fights all the time.
Mind you, there's some Group 1s these days in harness racing that shouldn't be a Group 1, Andy. But he's one of those horses that when you watched him down that home straight last night, you saw Wobbly come at him, and I think Wobbly's a future star. But for some reason, knowing the horse, you thought, he's just home here. There's no way that he lets these horses get past him.
No, you know, probably 60 or 70% of his wins are, you know, I think he's beat on the home turn. I think, oh, they got him cold, they're going to beat him. But, you know, he just finds another gear and he just, you know, just loves racing, just loves winning. You know, they're getting closer to him. Red Hot 2's got close and Wobbly got close, but they still haven't been able to get past him. So, he's still got a, you know, even though he's an 8-year-old, he's still got plenty of racing left in him, in my opinion. So hopefully he can win a couple more Group 1s down the track.
He does remind me of the northerly of harness racing.
Yeah, he probably is. He's very, very dour. Saying that, he has got really good gait speed. He's a high-speed trotter as well, but he's not... he's not very flashy when you watch him race. He's very tradesman-like. His biggest asset's obviously his gait speed, and he's just got a perfect gait for a trotter. He's just got a beautiful gait about him, which conserves a lot of energy for him.
And I guess he's very, very lucky that most of the big trotting events are held here in Victoria, because he's a trotter that just can't simply travel.
Yeah, no, you know, that's one advice that he's got. I hate travelling with him any time, even though Melton's just down the road for him. It's just like he's on a treadmill the whole way. He just sort of dances the whole way. And, you know, probably takes a little bit out of him. Who knows? But he's been fortunate enough to just stay in Victoria and win a lot of money just being here.
Andy, have you got a winner for us coming up over the next couple of days? You've got runners at three different venues.
Probably Arden Voyager at Melton. He's sort of racing quite well. It's not a tricky draw, but he's probably my best chance over the next few days, I'd say.
We gave our responsibility to Jason Bonington and Blake Redden for the $1,000 challenge there yesterday, and they had one of your horses in the Dude. And already the messages have arrived here on the RSN Central computer. G'day, Gareth. Your two mates, question mark if they're my mates now, you left in charge of the 1K challenge, Sack Shawley. I think they are. So, Andy, next Monday we're coming to you, all right? You'll have runners somewhere, and you're the best form expert / trainer going around in the sport of harness racing. No gallops on a Monday here in Victoria, so we are going to, because we need to get off to a wonderful start, Andy. So study up for Monday when the fields come out, but congratulations. And send our congratulations as well to Kate, another wonderful Group 1 winning drive.
RSM Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1800 858 858.
It's time to check in with the chief racing writer for the Age newspaper, Damien Ratcliffe, who has been out and about this morning, and he's been at Werribee to watch a couple of stars trial, and he joins us now. Good morning to you, Damien.
Good morning to you, Cara.
Centre Anna Lane, first of all, the gun sprint of Anthony Friedman. How did he look today at Werribee?
Yeah, so they actually pushed the trials back half an hour due to lightning, but he got out there about 8:30 with Mark Zara on board, and wasn't out there to do a hell of a lot. He finished third in the trial. Yulong January, who's obviously been up and running, finished second. So there's a sort of comparison point, but sort of the last 50 metres sort of eased down without doing too much, and chatted to Sam Freeman. They had a jump out at Balnarring, so that was his sort of second hit out, and he'll have one more and then head towards the Challenge Stakes in Sydney, over 1,000 metres, and then it'll be on to the TJ Smith second up and potentially out to 1,400, the all-age third up. But they're really looking at, hitting the TJ second up, and that's their target.
Holmesman's a fascinating trialer today at Werribee, formerly trained by Liam Howley, of course owned by Lloyd Williams, and now with Anthony Friedman. He's had a pretty handy career to date, and he's got plenty of ability. How did he look to Sam Friedman's eye there at Werribee today?
Yeah, they're still getting to know him too, as you said, coming across from Lloyd Williams' team. But his second hit out, and they had Ben Malam on board, who knows the horse well, and he looked sharp, actually. Yeah. He jumped towards the front and sort of led them off and really hit the line with a bit still under the tank, and they're going to the Chipping Norton, I think it's next week, over a mile. And I think he won the Sean in the spring first up over a mile. So they'll look to repeat that recipe and see if they can get a win first up.
Now, Mr. Quickie, Joel Salvo just can't stop talking about Mr. Quickie. I think Anthony Mithen might be just, hey, Joel, if you want to have my wedding at your property, you know how to promote my horse. But he's a good horse. And I like the way that Philip Stokes and the connections have started to aim him up at the middle distance horse, missed middle distance races this time in. How did he look?
Yeah, so all the big guns were out there. Gareth, Peter Moody was there to watch. Yep. Anthony Mithen, Wiley Dalziel, Philip Stokes was there handling the horse too. And they had Ollie on board, who's going to ride him in the All-Star Mile. So I think they think he's a really good miler, and to be honest, it was his first hit out today. He was a little bit slow away, but he cut the corner with Ollie on board and finished second behind Holmesman in the same trial, and that was over 1,100. So they're going to Cranbourne in 2 weeks, and they'll probably trial again over 1,000 or 1,200, and they're expecting to get into the All-Star Mile and run first up over a mile. We know he ran in the Maccabi Diva first up over a mile in the spring and finished third behind Gadding and Mystic Journey, and that was in quick time. He reeled off some quick sectionals, and then the preparation sort of went south when they went to the Turnbull, and Philip Stokes sort of thought that they probably backed him up too quickly because that first up run was so physical. So they'll run in the All-Star Mile, and depending on how he runs, they'll probably space his runs a bit better this prep and try and keep him there 1,600 or 2,000.
Yeah, I think he's a serious horse when he's at his best, and I think he's dangerous over the 1,600 to the 2,000. Hey, Damien, love your work, and the best of luck on Friday night as well at Moonee Valley. The next gen of racing, you have been the leader with this new organisation to get younger people involved in racing so they understand all facets of the game, from what the jockeys do, to what the trainers do, to what the breeders do, and how you can be part of it. So how's that going at the moment? And I think your first big event is on Friday night at the Valley, is that right?
Yeah, Friday night at the Valley. It's Typhoon Tracy Stakes Night. We'll be in the Ladbrokes Lounge, about 150 people coming. As you said, we'll have some of the Victorian breeders and Thoroughbred Breeders Victoria are going to be there talking about what they do. Inglis has got on board to promote Inglis Premier sales, and we'll have Dave as a party from Dream Thoroughbred to talk a bit about ownership and how you can get involved in horses, and we'll ask him about I'm Immortal, who's running in the Oakley Plate on the weekend, and he's going to head to stud. So, yeah, we'll talk a little bit about jumps racing too, and chat to some trainers. So, yeah, it's about introducing young people to the behind the scenes and hopefully make them feel a bit more part of the industry.
Yeah, I think it's a terrific idea, and it's exactly what racing needs. So job well done. Looking forward to following its progress, and we'll get you on our show on a regular basis, and we might even have a regular weekly segment called the Next Generation of Racing. Well done, Damien.
Thanks, mate. I hope to see you there.
RSM Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1-800-858-858.
Hello to you, Matty Nev. It's time for our sports update.
Morning, Gareth.
Now, our topic of conversation today was State of Origin Racing. Now, there's five per side, and we need a two-year-old, a three-year-old over the 1,400 metres, an open-class sprinter, an open-class middle-distance horse, and an open-class stayer. Now, this is my top five, and I only put it together this morning. So I want to, you let me know your state of origin. So wherever you're listening at the moment, so you could be based in New South Wales and looking at, on paper, I think they would nearly have the best side. Certainly. But South Australia got a good side. There's some stars in Tassie and there's some superstars over in the West. Victoria for mine, we've got a solid enough side and we would be around the mark. Hanseatic picks himself as our best two-year-old. I've got Super Seth and Anthony Friedman can be our coach here because most of his gallopers are in my side. So we've got Super Seth. Now, Santa Ana Lane after his trial today goes into my open class sprinting rank. So he'll represent us in that particular division. Now, my mile horse, it was a tough one. I was thinking about going back to a three-year-old like an Alabama Express. But after hearing the trial there of Mr. Quickie and with Joel Salwood by his side, who is what State of Origin is all about. He represents State of Origin, Jay Salwood. So Mr. Quickie will be my representative over the 1,600 metres. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you can go past the Melbourne Cup champ, Vowen de Clare, over the 2,400 metres. So that's my side. The skipper. It's a tough one. There's no... The skipper's probably... I'm giving it to the young fella, Super Seth. I love the way that he goes about it. So he can lead me out in the big V.
Old Vow might be a bit dirty about that.
Yeah, Vow. He's got a little bit of Queensland in him, Vow Declare.
I left him out.
Did you? Who'd you put in? Constantinople.
Surprise baby.
Oh, okay.
A little bit of X Factor, something different. Yeah. Possibly the best horse in the country, and we might not know that until the end of the year. I don't even know what he's going to be doing in the autumn. I think the talk will probably be just keep making sure that handicap stays, or his weight stays low for another tilt at a Melbourne Cup.
Well, that's a good one.
But he could be the best weight for age horse in Victoria.
Mind you, if we were picking our sides together and we're at the selection table, you'd probably talk me into putting Surprise Baby in front of Fowl and Declare over 2,400 metres.
Do you know what? This thought just came to my head then. I really struggled with an open-age 1,600 metre horse. Maybe you could run Surprise Baby at a mile.
No, I think Mr. Quickie's a better mile horse than him.
I don't know about that.
Mr. Quickie can be dominant if they train him and he's fresh for a mile. I agree with Damien Ratcliffe and his reporting there from Werribee with the way that team there of Mr. Quickie are approaching his campaign this time in.
Oh, I trust that, but I'd like to see it in action first. I couldn't catch him in the spring. Mm. I took Super Seth as the open class miler and took Loving Gabby as the 1,400-metre three-year-old.
Okay.
So I went a little bit different
over
there.
Super Seth.
Well, I took Super Seth as the best miler in the country.
Yep.
So I included him as that, and then the next best option as a 1,400-metre horse is Loving Gabby. So
very, very good.
And Hanseatic picks himself, you're right.
Now, gun two-year-olds out of the autumn.
Yeah, Prime Star, the horse that won the two-year-old, the two-year-old, $2 million Inglis Millennium is out for the autumn. Team Friedman there just confirming that a chip in the knee, a bone chip in the knee, means that we won't be seeing that horse until the spring, but I don't think they're overly concerned with that. It's probably more precautionary considering it's just a two-year-old. So, yeah, out for the autumn.
Kim Kleisters reminds me of Johnny Farnham. She never really seems to retire.
Can you believe it was 2007 when she was aged 23 when she retired for the first time, and then once again in 2012 after playing in the US Open. So she's had three kids since then, and she's come back onto the tour. She lost to Garbiñe Muguruza in the Dubai Open earlier this morning. Muguruza obviously made the final of the Australian Open. But 7-6 in the second set, pushed her 8-6 in the tiebreaker. It's a pretty good sign for a player returning to the tour. So I think Kim Clijsters could very easily be a force at the Slams in the next year or two.
Now, you just reminded me of a topic of conversation for tomorrow when I read the name Daniel Ricciardo. Has there ever been a more overhyped sports person that this country's produced?
I don't know about that.
What do you mean?
That's a bit harsh. He's been let down by his
That's what I mean. He's promised so much, and we thought he was a world champion, and now he can't even complete a race.
Well, I think if he had the tools at his disposal, he'd be able to.
He went down the wrong path regarding his team.
I agree with you there, but I don't think it's his fault that he hasn't been able to deliver. When he was at Red Bull and he had the tools, what did he win? He won Monaco and a number of other Grand Prix as well. Anyway, he's expecting a lot more from Renault this season, but unfortunately for him, their executive director, Alain Prost, has said, don't have a high expectation about this year. This year we have to say the truth. We don't have a high expectation. So it's a shame for Daniel. The second year with not a lot, but it is going to be a bit better. It's not filling your boots with confidence.
And that's what makes motorsport so frustrating, because not necessarily the best sports person wins the battle. It's the team with the most bedulla, and it's the team with the best money, and it's the team with the best car wins.
Yes.
And unfortunately, the best driver doesn't necessarily get the opportunity to be the best at his chosen sport.
Well, at the end of the season, when he's out of contract, he needs to wave goodbye to Renault and open the door to Ferrari. I think he'd be a magical fit there at Ferrari.
What about State of Origin? Do you agree with Johnny Ralph? Do you think that they need to take it serious when they take on each other?
Yes. Yeah. I said this to you weeks ago, Gareth, that I think it's important. If the players want State of Origin in the future, if they genuinely want that to happen, they need to go out there and take it seriously. I actually texted Mikey yesterday, and I couldn't believe the hype around the NBA All-Star game, considering they didn't try for the first three quarters. It frustrated me that everyone was so excited about how much effort they were putting in the fourth quarter, and I was like, if you didn't try for three quarters, how can I take the fourth quarter seriously?
Yeah.
And I think that's important. I think you need to have a crack in an event like this. Otherwise, and I know it is a fundraiser, but I think you can lose people. I think it is important. I agree with Ruffy.
You Can't Be Serious podcast, which you thoroughly enjoy, Sam Newman, Donnie Scott, and Mike Sheehan. You do.
Occasionally. When they don't be stupid.
And Ross Lyon, he was on there recently, and it was a fascinating chat regarding what happened with St Kilda. And he was quoted, I remember TLT, they were like, mate, just do the year 2012 and then we'll put you somewhere. And basically St Kilda didn't really want to give him, well, they didn't want
to
guarantee, they gave him a contract, but they didn't want to guarantee him
the money.
So the money, if he did get sacked, they were only going to pay him out for, say, 3 months.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
I think Ross's wife said, that's bull. Let's go and see the lawyer.
Mm.
And then he knew Fremantle had some interest. And hearing some stories regarding how that deal went about, it was quite like, I think a friend of a board member at the Dockers said, why don't you have a crack at Ross Lyon?
Yeah.
And that's how it all started. And within 48 hours, it was like they did the impossible.
So what does that tell us?
And they got Ross Lyon.
What does that say in hindsight, that the Saints should have locked him away, and that if you get a coach that can carry you to a grand final, you should take the punt and say, all right, we are going to give you a 3-year full guarantee contract? Or, I know a lot of people these days say that you shouldn't give long-term contracts to coaches.
Yeah.
What's the learnings?
Yeah. I think Fremantle did pretty well out of Ross Lyon.
I agree.
Yeah. And I don't know if he'll coach again. He says he won't, but I'm not quite sure. Yeah. I think he's a career coach. Now, just some breaking news. Hanseatic. This is not good for favourite punters. Like, barrier number one you don't want with his racing pattern. And that's what he's got. Luke Curry. A few sleepless nights now. He doesn't want to be three back the fence, smoking the pipe and held up.
Tell you what, it makes the race a whole lot more interesting.
Yeah, rulership barrier seven. So he'll be out in front dictating terms, you would imagine. That's a perfect barrier for Team Snowden and Mark Zara. We'll cross shortly to Matthew Stewart. We'll be live at that barrier draw.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1-800-858-858. RSN Central with Gareth Hall.
11:23 here at RSN Central. Matty Stewart's been busy this morning. He's at Caulfield for the barrier draw for the Blue Diamond Stakes, the number 1 2-year-old event in this state. And Matty, is it positive or is it negative news for favourite punters with Hanseatic after the draw?
Sam Freeman's just about to wander over and join me. We can ask him ourselves. I think initially the feeling was, oh, that's the last barrier he wanted to draw. But as always, there's always a positive spin. Sam Freeman joins me. Sammy, I guess in an ideal world, barrier one wouldn't have been the marble.
Yeah, or maybe not. You know, it's he drew two in the prelude and he managed to get himself out of trouble. So. Look, there looks to be really good speed drawn out wide, so hopefully he can, you know, they can spread out and he can, you know, the gaps will appear.
Yeah, the shortest route home theory. Just on the speed map, it's the biggest field any of them have met so far, and he's certainly one of them. As you just touched on, you reckon he could probably posse up a little bit closer than many sort of feared and anticipated. What's your first read of the map after drawing barrier one, and the second favourite rulership's drawn seven, so he's ideally placed.
Yeah, look, I think it's speed drawn all across the board. You know, you look at it and difficult tends to go forward. It's drawn 15, a beautiful night. She's drawn a good gate in two. Yeah, look, there's speed all over and a lot of the horses won't be hanging around, I think, and that'll play into our horse's hand. I think the strong speed will work in his favour. You know, the whole time in his races, he's just wanting to travel a little bit too strong. So if they can spread out, you know, he'll get into a really nice rhythm. And as I said, look, these big fields, we found it with Lyre last year. She drawn five and she ended up, you know, second last, you know, nearly on the rail coming to the home turn and managed to get to the outside and rock at home. So we might be calling on Luke Curry for another masterful ride, hopefully.
A lot of it's about peaking on the day. You mentioned at the press conference that Hanseatic up really, really well this morning. You're confident that Hanseatic's going to peak for the grand final?
Yeah, we think so. You know, this has always been the plan with him. And, you know, we've mapped this path out, you know, since the Mersin Cooper, and we never do a lot with him in his gallops at home. We tend to just keep him a little bit fresh and keep his sprint for race day. So, you know, he's had a really good 2 weeks since his run. He's in a really good rhythm up at Flemington. Steve Adams and Paul, his track rider, have done a great job with him, and now we just leg Luke up and hopefully he can do the rest.
You've got a stack of good runners on Saturday, but the most interesting, or one of the most interesting, is Super Seth against the older horses in the Futurity, and everyone's talking about this super group of three-year-olds, and he's certainly one of them. It's going to be an interesting weight for age test outside of his own age group for the first time.
Yeah, we're really excited to get him out against the older horses, and, you know, you've got a 10-time Group 1 winner or whatever it is with Melody Bell coming over, and, you know, he's going to have his work cut out for him, but we've got full confidence in the horse that, you know, he loves Caulfield. He's only been beaten, I think, once here. So it doesn't look like it'll be an overly big field. But he showed a bit of versatility first up in the Manfred, settling a little bit closer. And, you know, early in his early days, we really rode him off the speed and wanted to get him to relax and finish off. The good thing is if he draws a low gate now, he's got the ability to settle a little closer. And if he draws wide, you know, we can always ride him cold. And we think he's got a devastating turn of foot when you get him to switch off and relax. And Mark Zara, you're riding 55.5 on Saturday, you probably don't get him down to that weight too often, and that probably gives you full confidence that he thinks he can do it.
Just a quick one before I let you go. I know there's a lot of media here that want to grab you for a comment, especially about Hanseatic, but the champ, Chenier, our horse, how did he pull up after that fantastic run in the CS Hay Stakes? And all systems go, I'd imagine, to the guineas.
Yeah, he's pulled up super. He had a funny week leading into it. You know, he was in Sydney on the Sunday and suddenly he's in Melbourne and probably galloped a day later than we really wanted him to on the Wednesday. And, you know, it was probably a bit of a last-minute decision to run him in the CSAs. But, geez, he's given us full confidence going forward that when we can have a real proper prep with him and get him prepared for obviously this Australian guineas. Look, he seems to be in a really good space and, you know, he meets them worse off at the weights, those two, but, you know, he's flying under the radar and he was first up for 10 months. People do tend to forget that. And, look, he's out of Zadeco, which Dad and Lee trained, and she won a Wakeful and was second in an Oaks. So the mile isn't going to be an issue with him. But yeah, he's one of the most exciting horses I think we've got in the stable.
Yeah, indeed. He's certainly a very much a part of the super group of three-year-old Sam. Good luck. Best of luck from the Barry on Saturday. Stranger things have happened.
Cheers. Thanks, man.
RSM Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1800 858 858. On RSM Central, Tuesday Hacks, with Fox Sports Julian DeStoop and the Australians Courtney Walsh.
Time for the Tuesday Hacks. It's 11:40 here on RSN Central. Julian DeStoop, good morning.
Hello, G.
And hello to you, Courtney Walsh. Welcome back.
Thanks so much, Gareth and Jules. Hope you're both well.
How did you go with your country week tennis?
Aching joints.
Yep.
Bruised ego. Mm-hmm. Battered bank account. It's a very, very okay. big social week.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it sounds like a good week to me.
It's one of the most sensational weeks of the year. About 1,350 people.
Wow.
99 grass courts. You play all day. You party for most of the night.
Okay.
And play happy with the form. Getting old, though.
So it's all doubles.
All doubles. Showed some athleticism up there, Gareth. You know, I understand that there was some discussion last week about this on the Tuesday Hacks.
Yes. Well,
your fill-in brought that up.
Timmy Hodges.
Gareth and I were supportive.
Oh, okay, yeah. Disrespectful, yeah. Timmy. But, Courtney, is there any Nick Kyrgios's or Bernard Tomic's or I'm trying to think of a female tennis player that loses her
Serena
from time to time that carry on like pork chops in country week tennis?
Look, generally it's a pretty good spirit, pretty good natured. Someone sitting in this desk may have let loose with the racket into the back fence at one stage on the second day.
You're a racket thrower.
Well, when I was young, I was a racket thrower. Probably a critical break against the team that ended up winning the competition. Okay. Young guys from a town called Boosie.
Where's that?
No, they're not really from Boosie. They were Beveridge last year, and they were the Nana Goonbags the year before. very, very good players. Guys who had effectively one guy. The captain had played a lot in the States, still plays a very good level, and the younger guys are all, I suppose, semi-professional. They'll play the money tournaments around Australia, and some of them will try and get to college in the States. So they were pretty solid, but when you drop serve at a critical time in a match, mm-hmm. still stings.
Yeah, definitely.
At my age, you'd know it was very controlled. I knew exactly where that back fence was, and but still badly behaved.
Well, Courtney, next time you write an article on Nick Kyrgios and he loses the plot, I want the first paragraph to read, just like I did at Country Week Tennis, so I can know I know what Nick is feeling. He lost the plot.
Many years ago, Gareth, I actually wrote in defence of Nick, Confessions of a Tennis Brat.
Yep.
And spoke about it very much at a lower level, smashing rackets and things like that, and thinking how hard it must be to be able to grow up in public and do it with millions and millions of eyeballs on you. So, yeah. Mm. Dad dragged me off the court when I was a kid.
I got threatened with that.
Did
quite
you?
A few times. Yeah, I was a brat.
No, I was probably too soft in my sporting career. Anyway, I want to talk about the golf first of all. If the President's Cup was tomorrow, Australia should just take on America with our start to the PGA year, really.
In form, aren't we? Three winners already.
Adam Scott's putting nicely.
Adam Scott,
Cameron
Mark
Jones.
Leishman, Cameron Smith, they've all
Smith,
had wins.
I should say.
Which is great, because it wasn't a great year for the Australians last year.
No,
on the PGA Tour. It was a really, really down year, really. So what a great start. And Walshy was making the point before, I mean, how much can we put this down to the President's Cup and finishing the year with a tournament like that?
Oh, look, I think we can put quite a lot down to it because it had them so, admittedly, they were edged in the end, but the golf was such intensity, so tight, they had to fight for every single hole, every single stroke on a course that really tested both your mental but also your precision in terms of how you played it. I don't think it's any surprise that they've come out of that playing outstanding golf, Smith, Leishman and Scott. And for some of them, like Leish had been in a bit of a form slump, he spoke about that. Adam Scott had been in a slump, and now he's gone, wins in Australia, wins in the US, in California. And Smith, clearly a player on the rise, winning his first individual event. We've had a couple of winners, obviously, elsewhere in Europe and also in Asia, but a really strong start to the season. I'd love to see it, I suppose, I'd love to see a major success this year.
Well, Adam Scott's too good a player not to win another major.
Yeah.
He needs to win another major.
Up to number 7 in the rankings again. And you would think he'd have to be in contention. If the Masters started next week, you'd think he'd be right in there.
We're about to have a chat about Carlton and Collingwood and their how we think they will fare in 2020. 0416905052 to join the conversation. But just quickly while we're talking about golf, Matty Nevitt, the Hornet, in his sports update today was talking about Daniel Ricciardo and, of course, that Renault have basically painted another bleak picture for Renault and obviously Daniel Ricciardo in this upcoming F1 season. It made me think, like, who's the biggest overhype Australian sports people going around these days? Oh. And I don't like to be too negative because Daniel's unlucky, but I was thinking just then when we're talking about our golfers, Jason Day, he's had injuries.
He's struggled, he's had issues. Yeah.
He has been a world number one.
Yeah.
I know, but he has
world number one, a major winner.
Yeah, well, probably a little harsh, Gareth. Ricciardo, who else?
Yeah, but it's such a different case with Ricciardo because you whack him into McLaren, he's right up there.
Great talking point, Gareth. Yeah. Move on.
So well, negative.
I am negative. I'm slapping myself here. Where did that come from?
That wasn't on the rundown.
Yes, it was.
Well, I guess if you think about it, going back now, I think Nick Kyrgios had a really good career, but he hasn't lived up to his potential that he has yet. But Tomic was going to be an outstanding player and never got there. That's from the tennis sort of side of things. I think Nick can get there.
I'll give you one from golf, going back a bit. Bads.com. Aaron Baddeley.
Yeah.
Anyway, won the Australian Open as an amateur. Everyone thought this guy is going to be a world beater. He's still going around, but hasn't done a lot for a while.
In the footballing terms, I was thinking a couple of players, but I don't want to be too negative, so I'm not going to say it.
It might come up in Carlton or Collingwood.
Now, we'll start off with the Carlton Football Club. Three talking points here. Are they a genuine finals chance? For mine, no, they're not.
I'm with Gareth as well on this. I don't think they're yet a finals contender. I'd love to see them put together another solid year. I think anywhere between about 10 and 14 is a reasonable season.
Yeah, I think 10 wins is good for Carlton. 7 wins last year.
I think they'll struggle to get 10 wins.
I think they'll get around 10. I think if you're a Carlton fan, you'd like them to still be in the mix for the 8 about round 18. And if they don't make it, they've still got some kids. And you think if they're going to have a good year, Charlie Curnow would need to fire.
Yep.
He's their X factor, and he's not there for half the season. And that's massive for Carlton.
I think this man's their X factor. This is the second point we'll bring up about the Blues. Which Mitch McGovern will we see? If he's up and about, can play that role in the forward line where he links up from, say, half back to half forward, then the Blues can be pretty dangerous.
I find him an interesting player, Mitch McGovern, because he was at Adelaide. He was the third prong, right? I mean, Walker got the best defender. Jenkins got the next biggest because of his size. Mm-hmm. And then McGovern. So with his physical attributes, having the third defender was pretty good for him. And he could have had that again this year with Mackay and Curnow, but Curnow's not there. So, look, he's fit. They sent him away to get fit at the end of last season. So he should be better conditioned, but they need a lot more out of him than they got last year. He was pretty disappointing last year.
I thought he also played a really critical role at Adelaide in that he was the linking man. Mm. The key, the bigger guy running up towards the wing.
Yeah, him and Lynch.
Being able to form that link between defence and attack. I mean, he kicked 32 goals in his first full season in 2016, which is a pretty handy effort for a guy as a third forward, but also playing that linking role. 22 goals last year from 16 games, but that was more positioned in attack, so clearly that's indicative. If he has shed that weight and can form that linking role, I think that's very important for Carlton.
I've got a philosophy on that Adelaide Football Club forward line. Charlie Cameron was their most important forward because he was the one that used to defend so well in their defensive 50, put pressure on the opposition defence, and that made players like, Joshie Jenkins, it helped him out. It helped a player, of course, like Mitch. Definitely help Eddie.
I mean, people at Adelaide have said that, they lost all those players around that time. You know, they lost Lever and they've lost a whole heap of players over the last 6 or 7 years. But a lot of people say he was the one, the most costly they lost because of his talent, his pressure, his speed, his X factor, all those things.
Talking about small forwards, do you think Eddie Betts can have an impact this year in the AFL playing for the Blues?
I think he can. Okay. I think he's happy again. And I think if McGovern's playing well, he crashes packs. They might have to put Casbolt back down there. He crashes packs. So there's going to be crumbs. And if Carlton's playing okay, there's going to be crumbs for him. Yeah. So I still think he can kick two goals a game. I think he can kick 40 goals for the year if Carlton's having a decent year. So I think he's a... I think it was certainly worth... It's not even a punt. It made sense to bring him back. It might only be for 1 year. They haven't had a crummer since he left. So no. I think he can have an impact if Carlton's playing well.
Yeah, look, similar thoughts to mine. I mean, the key is obviously his body, whether he's lost a step of pace, and we won't really see that until the competitive stuff begins. And look, there were signs last year where he was struggling, but we should also note that Adelaide was really struggling. And he certainly had some games where he played some really good football. Now, I guess consistency as you get older makes it may dip a little bit. But I think if he kicks between 30 and 40 goals, I think that's a good season. And what did it cost them?
Yeah.
Nothing.
He was a bit of a flat-track bully last year. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes against the good side.
Well, I think if he does that, it's a massive win for the Blues, because I think the main reason really that David Teague wanted him at that football club was to have a little bit of experience in that group and try and add to their culture.
And it's a young forward line. Yeah. So I think his leadership in that forward line will be really important.
Okay, the Magpies here. This is a really interesting point, and everybody will be talking about De Goey throughout the 2020 season. He's out of contract. They say that he's turned up unfit to pre-season.
Yeah, he doesn't look... I've been down there a few times. He doesn't look unfit to me.
No.
He was a bit slow out of the blocks because he had the hamstring in the finals and he went overseas. And so he won't play this week. They play Carlton on Thursday afternoon in a practice game, but he'll play a March series game and he'll be right for round one.
I can't work out why everybody gets carried away with the pre-season. He looks unfit. Collingwood have got to September to make sure that Jordan's right to go. I still think he's the most important player nearly in that squad, because he's the X factor that can win you a game off his own boot.
Where do you play him?
I would play him forward midfield.
I would play more in the midfield than he has the last couple of years. I remember that game 2 years ago, the Queen's birthday game against Melbourne, and he played base. He was unbelievable. He had about 10 clearances, 30 possessions. I just think he gives that midfield a point of difference if they can get him up there enough. And that depends on his fitness, because he hasn't got the big tank yet.
Yeah. Do you play him like Dustin Martin?
Yeah, I think it's a good call.
Ideally, you would love to. And he's probably got a couple of... Martin's got some attributes that he hasn't got, but he's certainly got a couple of attributes that Dustin hasn't got in terms of he's probably a bit stronger in terms of marking capabilities. I did listen to your discussion with interest yesterday in terms of who was more important, De Goey or Darcy Moore. And I thought that was a very interesting discussion. If he's right, he's a match winner.
Yeah.
De Goey, and he can change matches, you know, in a 5 minute burst in the midfield. He can change matches in a 10 minute burst in attack. It's, you know, if you can get him right, and I'm also, talk about preseason fitness. He's the type of guy. He's a bull. He'll work into shape pretty quickly.
Yeah, and he's never gonna be a cut athlete. Like, he's a strong boy. Mm-hmm. Like, he's never gonna look lean. He's a powerful athlete.
He's a Greg Williams type.
Correct.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1-800-858-858.